KGMI and the Cascade Radio Group receive financial compensation to present this program in its entirety. Opinions and information expressed are those of the host and/or sponsors and do not necessarily reflect those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group. It's time to get informed and inspired. This is Saturday Morning Live, sponsored by Asset Advisors LLC on KGMI, News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham. Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Morning Live. This is your host, Robert Taylor, filling in for my sweet wife, Becky. We have some very interesting guests here today. We're going to talk a little bit about America and what we see happening in America from a little different perspective. So to kick it off, though, I'd like to share my story a little bit, why this topic is so important to me and why it is so interesting to me. As a kid and growing up in the 60s, there was quite a struggle. We called it the Cold War between the Soviet Union, the USSR, or the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics, and the United States. And shortly after the United States developed the nuclear weapon and used it in World War II, the Soviets also developed nuclear weapons, and we were at par. I think we went back and forth. Sometimes the Soviets had more than us. Sometimes we had more than them. But the short, long and short of it was, together we could destroy the Earth several times over. Well, those nuclear missiles and weapons are still out there. And so as a child, that really affected me. You know, you pick up on the fears and worries of your parents. And the Soviets had put a satellite in the sky called Sputnik, and we could hear it on the radio putting out its little beep as it went past and circled the Earth shortly thereafter. And that terrified us. That terrified my parents' generation to have this satellite going around the Earth that belonged to our enemy. Shortly thereafter, the United States developed its own satellite, communication satellite, so they say, and called it Telstar. Well, so I grew up kind of in that culture, the culture of the Cold War. We watched Vietnam unfold on TV news, and we knew that that was kind of a proxy war between the Chinese and Russians, or Soviets. I think there's a very important distinction to be made there. The Soviets and the Chinese were fighting a proxy war with the United States through Vietnam, and of course, we left that war. We lost that war. It was largely a political, diplomatic loss, not necessarily a military loss, but nevertheless, the end results were the same. My brother went to Vietnam and served in the Navy there. I had the opportunity to travel to Europe. I auditioned for an all-student group out of the Winchester Conservatory of Music in Winchester, Virginia. They accepted my application, and so I did a whirlwind tour of Europe. And one of the highlights of that tour was a trip to Yugoslavia, which was then a communist country. It was ruled by a guy named Tito. And I found that to be very interesting. I went into a little curio shop there where they had this about 2-foot by 2-foot box filled with crucifixes. And all the arms were broken off the crucifixes. So it was basically just Jesus on a stake with no arms. And I thought about that, and I wondered, what is that? It just seemed weird that they wouldn't have the whole crucifix in the box. And when I left Yugoslavia, I had a feeling that my time in that country had been experienced in black and white. It's a strange experience. I can't really explain it other than that. But it was just this dark, dingy sense of oppression. And when I think back on those days, it all seems to be just like black and white. Well, about that time, a fellow named Alexander Solzhenitsyn put out some books. He wrote them actually in Soviet prison camp, and he had to do it secretly and secret the papers out to have them published. And I think they were published first in the West. I'm not totally sure. But because of political considerations, a guy named Khrushchev, who became premier, wanted to discredit Stalin. So through, I think it was an act of God, Khrushchev allowed Solzhenitsyn to publish his works in the Soviet Union, a huge 3-volume set. But as a kid, I remember him being exiled to the United States, and he put out another book called One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich. And that was a book that kind of chronicled his day, one of his days in the Soviet gulag in Siberia. And if you get a chance, it's a short book, about a five-hour read. Get it, and you kind of have an idea a little bit about what we're talking about. So I'd like to start off with a quote this morning, and then I'll introduce my friends and guests. This is a quote from Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and he said, quote, "And how we burned in the camps later, thinking, what would things have been like if every security operative, when he went out at night to make an arrest, had been uncertain whether he would return alive and had to say goodbye to his family? Or if during periods of mass arrest, for example, in Leningrad, when they arrested a quarter of the entire city, people had not simply sat there in their lairs, paling with terror at every bang of the downstairs door and every step on the staircase, but had understood they had nothing left to lose and had boldly set up in the downstairs hall an ambush of half a dozen people with axes, hammers, pokers, whatever else at hand, the organs would have very quickly suffered a shortage of officers and transport, and notwithstanding all Stalin's thirst, the cursed machine would have ground to a halt. If we hadn't loved, but we didn't love freedom enough, and even more, we had no awareness of the real situation. We purely and simply deserved everything that happened afterwards." And I guess the case could be made that America may be in a very similar state as to what he was lamenting. And I certainly wouldn't advocate for anything other than our democratic process. But it's food for thought. And after all, that's why we're here this morning on Saturday Live, to provoke thought. And to do that, I'd like to introduce my friends who have a very unique perspective on American culture. And what it's like to come to America from a communist or the Soviet Socialist Republic. Incidentally, Soviet simply means committee. And so when you have a weak executive, you basically have a country run by committee. And I think personally that may be a little bit why we're seeing things the way they are. But to not go further, I'd like to introduce to my right here Yari Kulak and his lovely wife, Irena, yeah, and their pastor, which is and Andre Mirza. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Andre Mirza, who's the pastor of New Life Christian Church down in Mount Vernon. So they have a few things in common, and one of them is that they all escaped from the Soviet Union. And I'd like to make a distinction between the Soviet Union and Russia, okay? So we are just about to go to a break, and I am going to introduce them as soon as we come back and let them tell a little of their story. You're not going to want to miss this. And so shortly I'll be introducing them and turn it over. Right now I'm waiting for our break, which is...
This is Dick Donahue.
Get Down and Boogie is the winner of a new car. It's electric. Barrett's Clean Energy Sweepstakes is on now with your chance to win a Ford Mustang Mach-E and an EV charger. You heard that right. Work with the clean energy experts at Barron, and you could zoom away in a sleek Ford Mustang Mach-E, all yours for 3 electrifying years, plus an EV charger installed by Barron Electrical. Go solar, tankless, upgrade to a heat pump, you name it. Earn qualifying clean energy points for all things green. 1 point equals one entry. Your 5-time award-winning clean energy company, Barron, is here to transform your whole home with energy-efficient solutions and maybe even your commute. Right now, get a free heat pump with purchase of a solar or battery backup system, plus 16 clean energy points to win that electric car. Find yourself with a sporty new ride and call Barron today during Barron's It's Electric Clean Energy Sweepstakes on now through June 30th.
Barron, your full-service HVAC, electrical, and plumbing contractor. Our mission, improving lives.
No purchase necessary. Visit BarronHeating.com for details and official rules.
The opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KGMI or the Cascade Radio Group.
Welcome back to Saturday Morning Live with your host, Robert Taylor, filling in for the lovely and wonderful Becky Taylor. I'll do my best to do you proud this morning, darling. And I have lots of help here in the studio this morning with some of my good friends, old and new, starting from my far right, Pastor Andre Mirza.
That's correct.
Mirza, thank you. I've been practicing. He's the pastor at New Life Christian Church down in Mount Vernon. And my good friend Yari and his lovely wife, Irina Kulak, are also here to talk a little bit about their experience escaping from the Soviet bloc communist country. I would just like to say up front that though these countries are real close together, Moldova, where Yari is from, is about the size of Maryland. Ukraine, the second largest country in Europe, is about the size of Texas, I'm going to say roughly. And, of course, Russia is bigger than the United States as landmass goes. But it's not like going from Washington to Oregon to California, is it, Irene? And tell us a little bit about the differences.
Russians have a big personality.
Okay.
Yeah. So Russians and Ukrainians, I can understand a lot of Ukrainian. There's some similarities with our language.
Mm-hmm.
Moldavian is very different. They're Latin based, so Yari can understand Italians.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't understand each other. So when we get together for family get togethers,
yeah.
I don't understand his family. Like, I'll speak to grandma in Russian,
okay.
but she will respond to me in Moldavian, and I'm like, I don't know what you're saying, sorry. But with Ukrainian language, I can understand. So
okay, that's Andres from Ukraine. I'm
yes.
sorry.
Yep,
Andres. And Irina is from Russia.
Yep.
And Yari is from Moldova. So go ahead.
Yeah.
So what are the differences? I mean, they're culturally different. They go back to the 1400s, right?
Even further than that.
Further than that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Some of the countries are, you know, basically Moldova used to be part of Romania, so... Romania is it started in Latin in Rome.
He's doing fine. Everyone's trying to get the microphones adjusted here, and I can hear him just fine. You're doing good, Jared.
All right. So that's where the difference is in culturally speaking, is that the former Soviet Union was actually very diverse in culture. So they had multiple different ethnic groups all over, you know, starting from Russia, where the Muscovites are, all the way to Siberia, which is, they have an indigenous population there.
All the way almost to Alaska, right? Right across the Bering Sea.
Absolutely. Even in Alaska, there was some culture there. And also, if you go down to the Black Sea area, you have multiple different cultures there. So Moldova is different in the sense it has a different language, a different culture, a different view on life. So mm-hmm. when the Soviet Union came in, you started to kind of indoctrinate to their culture. So you couldn't speak your language. Yep. You couldn't speak or you couldn't even perform your culture in the sense because they wanted the state was a whole overarching over everything, over part of your life.
Mm-hmm.
They made sure that you were indoctrinated in your schools, in the way you speak, and in the way you do things in life, and you're controlled in every sense of the way.
Okay. Yeah, so they couldn't do traditional dances or play the traditional music, that sort of thing?
Correct.
Yeah, so. Okay. And I noticed, I think it was Moldova is about 91% Christian Orthodox. Is that correct? Very, very Christian-based
correct.
Culture.
Yeah. Correct. So okay. We do have a lot of roots in Orthodoxy, and there is a good growing group of Protestant as well.
Mm-hmm.
But during the Soviet Union, you could not speak that. You could not verbalize that because you would probably end up somewhere in Siberia or the Gulag
yeah,
or
exactly.
somewhere in North Russia.
Yeah, like Solzhenitsyn.
Pretty much.
He spoke out. He was considered a dissident.
Yeah. Correct. So when you become a dissident, you have pretty much get a target on your back.
Mm-hmm.
So when you get a target on your back, you're always constantly worried what you're going to say, what you're going to do. You're constantly looking around you. And that's kind of sometimes how... looks like right now is that, God forbid, you say something wrong and you end up on somebody's list and then you end up, censored or
mm-hmm.
canceled or something like that.
Yeah,
so it's very similar to what it was in the former Soviet Union.
Okay. So what about the Soviet? Well, first of all, maybe tell us your story. That's a harrowing story. And it really touched me because it's not always getting sent off to the Siberian work camps, and if you read the One Day in the Life of Ivan Denisovich, you'll see how horrible they were. I mean, they were eating soup made of grass, basically, with fish bones in it, and that's what they worked on all day in sub-zero weather. So Siberia is not where you wanted to go. But the frustrating thing I found about your testimony is just the frustration of working with a bureaucracy, and I think that's something all Americans can relate to. Back 60 years ago, there was very 1 to 2, maybe 4% of occupations were licensed. Now it's up to 25% of occupations have to have licenses with the government. So tell us a little bit about your story and the frustrations of dealing with the bureaucracy trying to get out of the Soviet Union and come immigrate to the United States.
So two stories, actually. The first story is going to be based on when I was a child. My parents actually had a chance to purchase a house. So you would wait in line to purchase things. So you wait in line for purchasing a car and wait in line to purchase a home if you could afford it. Mm-hmm. And everything was kind of a line. So you would have to wait in line to get that. And then when you had your kind of your ticket was punched, mm-hmm. that's when you were able to purchase something. So my grandfather, he was a war veteran, so he had his ticket punched to purchase a home. So he couldn't afford it, so my parents stepped in and said, okay, we do have the money. It wasn't like you're going to get a mortgage like these days. You had to have the cash.
Okay.
So you would purchase a home, and that home was yours until the government said so.
Yeah, there's always that.
So once the government told you that it's not yours, it's definitely not yours. So that day came actually when the government came in and said, well, we want to take this home by eminent domain to build skyscrapers. Mm-hmm. And when they did that, they compensated all the neighbors except us because of our faith.
Oh.
So you get persecuted based on your faith as well. Mm-hmm. So if you don't believe in the party line, you're going to get persecuted. You're going to be basically ostracized by everybody around you. Mm-hmm. So when that happened, they came in and started to say, you know what, we need you out by a certain date. And my parents said, well, compensate us for, you know, we paid money into this. And they refused, and they said nope. And then they gave us a timeline, and then the day came when they came into the property. They saw we didn't leave, basically grabbed my parents out, pulled them out of the home, beat them, and watched them kind of – I was about 4 years old, so I watched them pretty much get beat up in front of me. So it is tough. And one of the things that I watched is that how they want – I remember as a kid is they – pulled all our stuff into the street and just threw it out and started just knocking down the home. So they made you force you to be homeless because you didn't comply with their rules or their regulations or mm-hmm. their way of doing things. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of where you, at that point, that's when you start going against the state because you're not complying with what they want and you become a dissident. Then you're in danger of putting yourself into a camp somewhere in the middle of nowhere. And that's when you become a political dissident. You basically, the bureaucracy, the cog starts working against you. Mm-hmm. So that's what happened to us. And eventually we did win our case, but at a price. Mm-hmm. Everything at a price. And then you had kind of, you were red flagged anytime you wanted to do something.
But about that time, or how much later, you just decided, your folks just decided to immigrate and get out of the country. What was that like?
That was actually another interesting story. The second story kind of where we were leaving the country, and basically what happened was in order for you to leave the former Soviet Union, you had to renounce your citizenship. And once you renounce your citizenship, you're considered nobody. So you could end up anywhere, mm-hmm. no matter what. They could just ship you off somewhere and leave you to die because mm-hmm. you have no country. You're not a citizen. So at that point in time, basically when my folks decided to do that, they were told you need a certain amount of time to get out of the country before something happens to you, quote unquote.
Mm-hmm.
So at that, we...
People did disappear over there, right? Would just
all
disappear.
Yeah, one morning you see your neighbor there and the next morning you don't see your neighbor. It's not like here in the United States you have to fear that. But it's something that we definitely had in the back of our mind constantly. Mm-hmm. It was a constant fear that you're walking around. So when we did make that choice, we decided to leave the former Soviet Union. We actually turned in our papers, and we kind of received some papers, traveling papers, to leave the country. And we ended up going from Kishinev, Moldova, flying to Moscow at that point in time. And that's how you would get out of the countries, flying through Moscow, I think airport number two at that point in time. It's the international airport. So I'll probably finish after the break the story.
Okay, we'll finish that up. And that's got to be frustrating dealing with that bureaucracy, not to mention the fear of just being disappeared or sent to Siberia or finished, left somewhere to die. So with that, we're going to take another break, and we'll be back to finish Yari's story and try to make some connections between what happened to him and our world today.
Join Windermere real estate experts Rick Todd, Julie Brown, and Lyle Sorensen every Saturday at 10 a.m.
You have to treat it more like a balanced market than when we had crazy low interest rates.
Right.
Radio real estate.
Buyers are going to get a great value.
What we like to call real real estate.
Real estate.
Where the buyer actually gets to be represented properly.
Brought to you by Windermere Real Estate on KGMI, AM 790 and 96.5 FM. Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
Stop by Dewey Griffin Subaru whenever your Subaru needs a quick service and a car wash. Check out Dewey's Express Service Center. It's fast, convenient, and best of all, there's no appointment necessary. Open 6 days a week, including Saturdays. Stop by for your next oil change or any other minor maintenance, and you'll get a free car wash with any service. Dewey Griffin Subaru, community-minded and community-driven, and the only certified Subaru tire and service center in Whatcom County.
KGMI wants to put a grand in your hand. You could be one word away from a chance to win $1,000.
That's right. Just listen each weekday to KGMI for the keyword during the 8 a.m., 11 a.m., 2 p.m., and 5 p.m. hours.
Then go to the Grand in Your Hand contest page at mybellinghamnow.com before midnight and enter each keyword for your chance to win $1,000.
We'll have four keywords each weekday so you can increase your chances of winning by entering all four every day we play the contest.
You already listen to KGMI for the latest local news and discussion of the latest issues. Now you can win $1,000 while you do it.
A Grand in Your Hand is brought to you on KGMI by Niederhaus of Luxury, Whatcom County's newest fine jewelry store, next to Lombardi's on Bellwether Way.
A Grand in Your Hand is back on KGMI.
Get details at mybellinghamnow.com.
You've got questions about your car or truck? And we have answers on KGMI's In the Shop. Dan from Bellingham Automotive, Brian from Dr. John's Auto Clinic, and Kirk from Angler Automotive are here to help. And we have a great new way for you to get your questions or comments to them. Email them to intheshop@kgmi.com. Then listen each Saturday at 9 a.m. or check out the podcast at mybellinghamnow.com. Once again, that's intheshop@kgmi.com.
The latest local news and important topics of the day from the West Mechanical Studio.
Rest easy in a cool home this summer. Contact West Mechanical Heating, Air Conditioning, and Electrical to add AC to your existing system for as little as $140 a month. Find them at westmechanical.net.
Get the latest news and information 24/7 with KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM in Bellingham. Streaming live at mybellinghamnow.com.
CBS News Brief. Israel is bracing for a possible direct attack by Iran. Military spokesperson Rear Admiral Daniel Hagari.
Israel is on high alert. We have increased our readiness to protect Israel from further Iranian aggression. We are also prepared to respond.
Iran has vowed revenge after a deadly Israeli strike on its consulate in Syria. At a mall in Sydney, Australia, a man went on a rampage with a knife.
We saw the guy come up the escalators with a big black knife in his hand. And just really calmly, he was just walking like he was having an ice cream in the park.
Six are dead. The attacker was shot by police. Days after the Arizona Supreme Court upheld an abortion ban that dates back to the 1800s, Vice President Harris was in Tucson talking reproductive rights.
We all know if Donald Trump gets the chance, he will sign a national abortion ban.
CBS News Brief. I'm Stacey Lynn.
Welcome back to Saturday Morning Live. We were just hearing from Yari Kulak about his experience and his family's escape from the former Soviet Union. So, Yari, would you like to continue? You're stuck in the airport terminal, as I recall.
Actually, we just got to Moscow. So what happens is once you get to Moscow International Airport, you go to security and you check, you bring your papers to them.
Mm-hmm.
And when we got to that point, they decided that they were going to take our papers away from us, and we couldn't do anything about it. So basically what happened was we got stuck between security and going to the international section of the airport.
It's not like you can go anywhere without those papers over there. Either you can't check into a hotel or anything like that.
No, you're a nobody. Yeah. You're basically, to remind, kind of an analogy would be The Terminal, the movie with
Tom
Hanks.
We've seen that. Uh-huh.
So basically that's what happened to us, and there was about 200 people stuck in that security area between getting into the towards the international section and actually the section where the security, where they check your passports and things like mm-hmm. that. So when they took our papers, they were like, you didn't have the right paperwork. And based on that, they, on that claim, they took everything away from us in the sense that we had no rights anymore at that point in time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You are a nobody.
Yeah.
So that scared the daylights out of everybody there because everybody thought they were done. They were going to get shipped off somewhere, and you were never going to be found again. They kept us in that state for about 3 weeks or so.
Yeah.
So before they started even the process of moving us forward. So we kind of stayed a little bit with relatives, but the majority of the time we spent being at the airport,
mm-hmm.
living at the airport. We weren't showering at that point at the airport, but trying to wash ourselves as much as possible. And you know, just basically out of the sink, it reminds me of that movie so much sometimes when you're sitting there washing your face in the sink just to keep yourself clean.
Mm-hmm.
And that happened to us, and there was basically families with babies and kids. And I remember sleeping on kind of luggage. We would make makeshift beds, and mm-hmm. we'd lay down for the night and think, okay.
So how long were you stuck in that airport?
Probably about on and off, a month and a half.
Okay.
We were stuck in there, and we got to the point where the U.S. consul had to come in and kind of feed us because we were out of money. We were out of everything. We were dirty. We were not clean.
Yeah.
And
refugees. You
know, refugees, yeah. basically. Yeah. Yeah. The true meaning of a refugee.
So you made it to the United States. You made it to America.
Yep.
And you, I mean, that had to have tremendous challenges. You didn't know the language very well. Is that correct? Didn't know the language.
Yep.
But you climbed that mountain, and you all are doing very well now. Tell me, I kind of think of the old frog in the pot analogy. You throw a frog in a pot of water and heat it up slowly, and the frog is just comfortable in there, and he does, because it's happening slowly, he doesn't think to jump out of the pot until finally he boils and the owner of the pot has frog legs. So how do you see, is that an apt analogy to what you guys kind of came to this country? You found freedom, things were wonderful, and then you started to maybe not feel so comfortable. What tell me a little bit about that, if you could.
Honestly, it was during the COVID period when they started shutting down businesses and churches, and that period for us as immigrants from the former Soviet Union kind of scared us a little.
That kind of brought back some memories.
Yeah,
huh?
A little bit of a PTSD in the sense that you were controlled at every level, controlled of what you do, what you say, mm-hmm. what you eat. Even, you know, you were restricted how much, you know, you could get as far as flour and sugar and even toilet paper.
This was in the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So in the Soviet Union, in order for you to get bread, you had to have a coupon.
Right.
So, and if you were, and you were always waiting in the line. So when you were constantly waiting in line, sometimes the line would cut short because they didn't have enough food for you.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a constant worry that you were always constantly, you might not have enough.
Okay.
And that fear.
Irina, what brought the former Soviet Union back to you? I mean, what did you experience? What did you begin to see in this country? And when did the light start coming on that maybe things weren't as they should be?
Well, for me, I didn't really experience communism. I was six when I came to the U.S. And I'm going to fix this here. I was six when we came to the U.S.
Okay.
And where I was born was in Barcuda. It was in Russia, all the way north towards the Arctic. My grandfather was there. He was sentenced to 25 years for his faith. And he got out early, so my mom, he stayed there after he was released. He was released 5 years into a sentence.
So did he go to Siberia then? Was he
it
in
was
the gulag?
Not Siberia. It was more west of okay. Siberia. It was the gulags were there. There was a lot of army training there. Yeah. So my mom was born there. He stayed there. He started an underground church there.
Mm-hmm. And it was for his faith. It wasn't like he went out and stole something or murdered somebody.
No,
it was because he believed
in
Jesus.
Yep. Okay. And my mom was born there, and then that's where she met my dad, and then that's where I was born. And we immigrated through Italy, so I had it easy. I definitely did not have a terminal story.
Okay, well, that's good. Yeah.
I bathed in the ocean.
Nice, yeah.
So I had a great experience coming to America. We flew into Seattle on a Friday, and my dad went to work on Monday.
Oh.
And here I am.
Wonderful.
So,
okay.
But we have, all three of us have a very rich history with our parents and our grandparents.
Absolutely.
And what they went through and the mindset that they had and the stories that you hear. So especially during COVID, when COVID happened, both sides of my family, I mean, everybody, even, you know, Yari's family and, I'm sure you guys experienced too, Andre, was just like red flags everywhere, you know, like you can, you know, you go to Costco, you can only buy one carton of eggs. We're like, what the heck is going on here? You know, so it was,
Okay. So Andre, you came from Ukraine, which is very interesting because it seems like our media wants to paint these three countries as if they hate each other. But these three folks, the four of us, actually have one very unifying belief system that supersedes the Soviet Union or democracy or capitalism or socialism or communism or any of that. Can you tell us a little bit about your experience coming out of Ukraine and then how your belief transcends these political things that would make people hate each other, these ideologies? Before you do, I'd just like to share one other quote from Alexander Solzhenitsyn. And he talks about this building of hatreds in society, something the Soviets did very much on purpose, and I see going on here in this country that we're being taught by the media and the politicians to hate other people because of their race, because of their financial conditions, because of their politics. And Solzhenitsyn said this, to do evil, a human being must first of all believe that what he is doing is good, ideology. That is what gives evil doing its long-sought justification and gives the evil doer the necessary steadfastness and determination. This is the social theory which helps to make his acts seem good instead of bad in his own eyes and others, so that we won't hear reproaches and curses but receive the praise and the honor. Today it seems like there's a faction that feels like beating up members of the other political party is a good thing, because that other political party, after all, they're white nationalists and they're Christian nationalists. And, you know, so there's been this hatred built up and they kind of justify it with an ideology. But you came from Ukraine, Andre. What was your experience and what do you find in America?
I have a little bit experience of Soviet Union. They almost choked me to death, especially at school. I was young, and it was a middle school. And if you did something wrong, even if the pencil fallen from the table and you lay down to pick it up, the pencil, if the teacher saw you, he will pretty much do whatever he wants. He can beat you up. He can throw you. He can choke you to death. But for the other ones who's not Christian or have a different idea of political idea or agree with them, he will do and he will give a great grades. He will do anything for them to lift them up, give them a colleges and go to institute. Mm-hmm. You have rights, all kind of rights. But if you're not in the same party, if you are Christian, forget about college.
Yeah.
Forget about institute. Forget about a good work, a promotion. You will be in a mode of survivor. Mm-hmm. You kind of start with the language. And then right now, war in Ukraine and Russia, and it's begin because of the language. I mean, come on. We grew up in Ukraine. We speak, they make us to learn Russian. They said it have to be Russian.
Mm-hmm.
And right now they're saying that Ukrainian cannot speak Ukrainian. So what I'm trying to show you here, it's the party makes decision for every nation or any groups or any ethic.
Yep.
They make a decision what they want. If you disagree, I mean, the best scenario, you will end up in the prison.
Yeah.
If not killed.
So how can you all, I mean, Ukrainian, Moldovan, Russian, how can you all be friends? How does that work? And an American, too. I mean, that's got to be bad, right?
Well, if you look at us right now, faces to faces, you would say, you wouldn't say the different by the look.
Yeah.
Because we kind of the same look, mm-hmm. Light skinned, a little bit darker here and there. But it's mostly is the same look. So we married to one another. We yeah. grew up, children and all of that. We it's no different. Since only the different, we speak different language because we live in different regions. Mm-hmm. It's like, let's say they are in America, Texas, they have their own language. They their own words they use all the time. You go here in Seattle area, I mean, they have their own language there. So, and if Andre Ukrainian come, he's saying, like I'm saying, my English is perfect. I have to learn yours. So, but what I'm trying to say, most of us, we as a family,
mm-hmm. yep.
in the countries, in my dad in Ukraine, his brother in Russia, and he was a bishop of Russia.
Okay.
So we grew up, we married, we took each people. It wasn't any problem till the somebody take over as a ruling,
mm-hmm.
and he sets a rule.
Yeah.
So, and party or a leader of the party.
Instead of individual freedom, you have a government telling yes. everybody they yes. have to do the same thing and think the same thing. Actually.
Yes. One story, you kind of start off about a Gulag, and then you start up a story like they took and sent it. And I want to just brought up the story. I'm going to be quick before the breaks. It's they took the 70 people from the village. My grandpa was one of them. And they don't ask. They say, hey, we're going to take you to work. And they took them and drive them to Siberia. And when they drive them to Siberia, what it is, what happened, we'll go after break and we'll continue. So be with us right after break.
Okay, and thanks again, and we'll be back in just a minute.
Dr. John's Auto Clinic, located in Bellingham on Kentucky Street, is here for your auto repair and service needs. Trusted and affordable auto repair in Bellingham for over 25 years. Ask about their oil change and maintenance inspections. You can hear Brian from Dr. John's Auto Clinic every Saturday on In the Shop on News Talk 790 KGMI. Or check out Dr. John's Auto Clinic at djautoclinic.com. And on Facebook for the latest in auto repair news. Dr. John's Auto Clinic, reliable, honest, and a part of this community for over 25 years.
Hey, this is Deanna Haraluk with KGMI's all-new Pet Pulse. I'm a pet parent myself, and we all want the best for our critters, whether they're furry, feathered, hooved, or otherwise. The segment is brought to you by Whatcom Veterinary Hospital. Did you know that 1 in 4 pets suffer from obesity? Pet obesity can shorten your pet's lifespan by up to 2 years. Contact Whatcom Veterinary Hospital for a wellness exam today. And tune in to KGMI's Pet Pulse Wednesdays during the morning news at 6:20 and 7:50, and during the afternoon news at 5:20, right here on KGMI.
Trust. It's the foundation of every lock and key, and it's the reason Accurate Lock and Security has been serving Northwest Washington for over 90 years, because people know that Accurate are the ones you can trust to protect your valuables. From Abloy to Medico to Keymark, Accurate's high-security locks offer a patented key blank that only contracted dealers can cut, extreme resistance to physical attack, and a variety of security enhancements to bolster your protection. Accurate Lock and Security, the security professional team. Online at AccurateLock.net.
We don't have the usual traffic jams that they have in the big city, but sometimes things happen to snarl everything up. Depend on KGMI to keep you cruising to your destination with KGMI Traffic Alerts. We'll tell you where the trouble spots are, and if you see problems on the road, give us a call at 360-676-5464 so we can spread the word. KGMI News Talk 790, 96.5 FM, and KGMI.com.
Welcome back to Saturday Morning Live. We're talking with Andre, Yari, and Irina about their experience with communism. You know, in America, I think we kind of lose the fact that communism is just as bad as the Nazis ever were. Hitler killed 20 to 30 million of his own civilians. Stalin, the Soviet dictator, killed 43 million estimates of their own unarmed civilians. And Mao killed over 60 million. And some of these were through starvation. So I want our listening audience to understand that it's not just the Nazis and the fascists that were evil. The communists are just as evil. So go on with your story, Andre. You were sharing with us about in school and how the Christian students were persecuted and the non-Christians or those who follow communism were what we used to call privileged characters.
Yeah, I want to just continue on that, on the restriction of everything. So, and not only school and colleges, it's a restriction at work. There's many things. To speak in, as you begin in the beginning of the show, you said about Siberia, about how they took it. They can come to the village, and they know. They have a list, every person who's in the village who's against them, who against the party, or if you are a believer, a Christ believer, they will definitely go after you.
Yeah, we call those blacklists here today, and that's considered very forbidden. But now we see our executive branch starting to compile blacklists, which should be another red flag. But go ahead.
Yeah, and interesting, they have the many ways to take the people out. So the one of the ways it was happened to my grandpa Moses, they come to the village and they take, hey, man, we're going to take you to a work. We have a special work going on, so we need the help there. So they went to a bus, sit in the bus. They drive them to a train station, took from the train station and drive them to Siberia. Mm. And they thought they're going to do them work up there, but ended up they be in the prison.
Yeah, and it's interesting. When they work up there, it's in sub-zero weather. Snow drifts, inadequate clothing, not enough food, 16, 18-hour days. I mean, from sunup to sundown, basically. And you don't complain.
Go ahead. And they take them not without any court. Mm-hmm. They just do whatever they want. Exactly. They apply whatever they want. And they're right. I mean, that you can't fight with them because it's a party. It's the nation. It's a country. They decided to do that. So anyway, they ended up sitting there in the prison and for 5 years. So on that case.
So what puts off your alarm bells? What do you see happening in America, in light of your experience, that makes you nervous about where the government is or isn't taking us, maybe taking us?
As the father of four sons, and all my sons been here at the school. So number one is a red flag for me personally. I see in the school. They take the parents' rights. That's number one. That's what the party does. They take the rights, any kind of rights. And if you're against it, they will put the law on you. They will put – and it's – take the – let's – as example in America. I came to the United States. In America, it's like a Christian godly people. Mm-hmm. And the rules, the strategy, it was so beautiful. 25 years later – I'm just, there's no prayer, there's no commandments. The more and more the Bible or faith take it out from the school. You cannot pray, you cannot share, you cannot share the gospel. You cannot do anything. Mm-hmm. They take away from your free will, free speech.
So communism, you're not allowed to be a Christian. Basically, mm-hmm. communists are not Christians, and it should be that Christians aren't communists. Why do you think that is, Andre? Do you think that people become communists because they reject Jesus, or do they reject Jesus because they're communists?
There's a coin of two sides. They reject Jesus because they become a communist. That's mostly is if you've been believer and you have a little bit of faith. And when you become, because you want an institute, you want a job, you want a driver license, you want a higher level, so you come, and then you have to renounce God you believe. They make you to renounce. Say, hey, mm-hmm. if you renounce God, we're not going to put you in the prison. That's happened to my dad. That happened to my grandpa. To happen to any preacher. So what it is right now in the system here, they will give you a privilege, but only if you're not a Christian, mm-hmm. only if you are their faith. They have a faith. They believe stronger than we believe. They believe that God doesn't exist when everything says that God exists.
Yeah.
So, but they want to believe what they believe. So in this country, that's what I see as coming this way to make you believe what they believe.
So it used to be, I don't know if you want to use the word popular to be a Christian in the United States. I mean, obviously in the 50s and 60s, it was kind of assumed. You know, most people went to church and most people believed in God and they were maybe Methodist, Baptist, Catholic. But now it seems like that's not so popular anymore. And it seems like sometimes there's certain groups of people that want to paint Christians as bad.
Yes, you're right. And then I want to highlight this. Why is government or why is who in control, why they give more rights to one party than the other party? Why we have, especially in the state of Washington, California, Oregon, and those states. Well, I live in Washington for 25 years, and I see you have more, not Christian have more rights, but you guys, the other party has more rights to do what they want, to bring the law to school, to students, to colleges.
So we see certain kinds of flags in schools, but Christian flag is not allowed. We see sexual things being taught
that's
in schools,
correct.
But we can no longer pray in schools. That's
yes.
kind of that, where
that's,
you're
that's
going
what
that?
I'm heading.
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say. And then clearly, they the rights, the truth, they put it down, but they present the truth on the their truth on the light of the evil.
Right.
Or they're not going to say evil. They call evil good.
Yeah.
But they call good evil.
That, yep.
So that's what we see clearly right now in this generation.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Irina, you want to, as we're winding down here, do you have any more you'd like to share? Maybe chime in just a little bit. She's shaking her head. No. Yari, what do you have to wrap up here with a little bit this morning?
I think, honestly, at this point in time in this country, looking back and looking at the three of us here who have different backgrounds, different, you know, ethnicity, we all come together through our faith.
Okay.
That is what unites us, and that's what is going to unite everybody, is having a common goal of understanding and actually respecting one another.
Yeah.
I think we've lost the sense of respect, and we've lost the sense of being critically thinking towards ideas, and you don't have to agree with everybody.
Right.
But you can tolerate the idea and allow them to speak.
Yeah.
And I think that we've lost that.
Exactly. It seems like sometimes the government in particular, or they want us to think a certain way. And it seems to me more and more that the foundations, Christianity, whether you are a Christian or not, you have to look back and say that 40, 50, 100, 150 years ago, this nation was a lot more friendly to the Christian faith, whether it was Puritans or Methodists. We had the great awakening. And something's gone wrong in our country. People can't walk down the streets safely in large cities. As we leave the Christian ethic, which was basically do unto others as you would have them do unto you, we see a breakdown in society. We see people from other cultures that maybe don't respect our cultures the way these folks do coming. And without a Christian faith and without that restraining a power to keep our cohesion as a society. You know, when I became a Christian back in July of 74, so it's almost 50 years. And we were always looking for this guy called the Antichrist. And there was books written about it and churches out of Southern California. I mean, that's what they preached. Late Great Planet Earth by Hal Lindsey. And everybody, they seemed to want to look for this man that was going to live in a city with seven hills. And he was going to have a name, a number attached to his name. And we just obsessed over that. I mean, I've seen Christians almost come to blows over, you know, the end times, what they call eschatology. But I think in the process, we missed that the only real time that Jesus talked about the Antichrist, he talked about, well, in John, at least, John the Apostle tells us that the spirit of Antichrist was coming into the world, and it was already in the world.
Yes.
And the way that you differentiate between the spirit of Christ and the spirit of Antichrist is whoever confesses that Jesus came and is God and came in the flesh and rose from the dead, that is the spirit of Christ. And those who don't are the spirit of Antichrist. So for me, with our question about, you know, do you have to become you have to stop being a Christian to be a communist, or do you become a communist and then stop being a Christian? I think it runs much deeper than that, and while we struggle to figure out what's going on in America, it's probably not exactly correct to say that there are some communist powers trying to gain power. I don't think you can technically call it communism. We look at the one world order. George Bush talked about that. We have the World Economic Forum. And basically, it's just men wanting power.
Yes.
And to get power, they don't want to share power with a god. There's two types of people in this world, those who think they are created by a creator and those who think that God is created by them. And that, for me, is really the dividing line. And I just so embrace our friends from the Soviet Union because they value. They value the faith that got them through hard times. We have had it very easy in America. That whole area between Germany and Moscow is called Bloody Alley. That was the way that the Europeans have historically invaded the Russian cultures through Poland, through Yugoslavia, and Leningrad. You know, is a terrible thing. We have not seen that, and I would like us to not see that. And so I think the best way to not see that is to reconsider faith and reconsider our Lord Jesus Christ and Christianity. So did you have one more thing to add?
Question to all of you people. Question is how to stop the power, evil power. And you have that keys. The key is your voice, your yes or no. So you that biblically say yes to the truth and no to the evil.
Yep.
You have that key.
I think it was Solzhenitsyn that said the greatest act of bravery is just saying no to evil. So that's where we are in America. It's time to say no to evil. In my opinion, if you have another opinion, you can probably write the station and tell them. But in my opinion, it's a return to God and our Lord Jesus Christ. That's how we stop evil. We say no to evil by considering the claims of Christ and looking at the historicity and what these folks have learned through experience. Hopefully we in America can learn from their experience. That's called wisdom, after all, when you can learn from another person's experience. And so I just hope this radio show has done a little bit to promote wisdom. And I'm getting signs, which means we're about to wrap up. And it's been such a wonderful time here this morning. Becky should be back in the saddle here in about 4 weeks. And until then, I want to thank you for joining us on Saturday Morning Live. Have a great week, and be sure to consider Christ this week.